The Tom Hartman Program is broadcasting live from the RNC Convention at position 3229 at the Madison Square Gardens Theater. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday will be on the air from noon to 3 p.m. Drop by for Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
The Tom Hartman Program is broadcasting live from the RNC Convention at position 3229 at the Madison Square Gardens Theater. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday will be on the air from noon to 3 p.m. Drop by for Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
From the brave, the bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Has a problem. People all across America are learning that it's a beast of a corporation that, among other things, pays poverty wages, engages in massive sexual discrimination, routinely exploits sweatshop labor, bullies its own suppliers, muscles local competitors out of business, and tries to buy its way into cities that don't want it. So, with its reputation sinking and sales slipping, Walmart is finally taking action. Not to reform itself, of course, but to try to put a thick coat of PR polish over its brutish tactics. A few months ago, it launched a multi-million-dollar advertising blitz to paint itself as the Mother Teresa of global corporations. And now, Walmart has made the ultimate reach for media respectability. It has become a sponsor of NPR. Yes, for some $30 million in corporate funds, it gets to present itself on public radio as a paragon of virtue in a series of underwriting ads. For example, in one, an NPR announcer solemnly intones that Walmart is, quote, bringing communities job opportunities, goods and services, and support for neighborhood programs. Also, to curry media favor, Walmart has suddenly become a benefactor of journalistic studies, putting up $500,000 for journalism scholarships at 10 universities. These Walmart scholars will be the future reporters covering the company, or choosing not to cover it. So the corporate benefit of this philanthropy is obvious. But why would the universities go along with such an obvious cash-for-favoritism ploy, especially since Walmart is notorious for censorship, literally banning certain publications from its stores? Because money talks louder than principles. After all, said the head of journalism at Arizona State, Walmart is not the American Nazi Party. This is Jim Hightower saying, well, at least we learned that journalism has some standards. Apparently any sleazeball outfit better than the Nazis are okay.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. We just dropped the signal and came in. Tom Hartman here live, broadcasting from the Republican National Convention Radio Row. And we've got one of those funky phone lines, the connection here. So so far in the last 10 minutes we've been connected, it's dropped 3 times. So from time to time I may vanish for a few seconds. Rama may pop in so we don't have dead air, not for our affiliates to worry. Anyhow, here we are. Interesting things. Number one, I guess, George Bush has declared that we have lost the war on terror. Yep, it's absolutely unwinnable. Can't win the thing. It's, he says, I don't think you can win it. This after months of listening to the, as John Edwards says, after months of listening, the Republicans base their campaign on their singular ability to win the war on terror. The president says we can't win the war on terrorism. And then he says, this is. But apparently we're doing just that. Hey, Rama, did you notice that we vanished? Yeah, I'm back. Okay. Thank you very much. You know, feel free to pop your voice in here. It's this is a collaborative effort. Rama Schneider there in Vermont. We're here in New York and with some notoriously strange ISDN lines. John Edwards, this is no time to declare defeat. But apparently, as I said, George W. Bush has. In an interview published Friday in the New York Times, Bush said he had made a miscalculation on what the conditions would be in Iraq. Another great declaration of defeat, as it were. I'm sorry, are you trying to say? No? And amazing. Absolutely amazing what's going on here. By the way, I think and this, I mean, look at some of these historic quotes here. George Bush on 7/19 saying, I have a clear vision and a strategy to win the war on terror. On May 14th, people say, can you win the war on terror? Of course we can. April 13th, one of the interesting things people ask me now that we're asking questions is, can you ever win the war on terror? Of course you can. It's essential that we win this battle in the war on terror. And on February 12th, we're going to win on the war on terror. But yesterday, I don't think you can win the war on terror. So I guess we can't win the war on terror. Is that okay? So the other big event, by the way, just to remind folks in New York City who are listening to us that Wednesday night, September 1st, 7:30, Florence Gould Hall at the Alliance franchise, or Francaise, is it? I'm not sure. 55 East 59th Street between Park and Madison is going to be a showing of This Land Is Your Land, a movie that that I'm in, along with a whole bunch of other folks, Jim Hightower. I don't have the list here in front of me, but you know, it's a bunch of good folks. Anyhow, if you want more information, you can call the box office at 212-355-6160. Our number, 866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in. We are able to put people on the air. If you want to call in and find out what's going on here. I don't know if you saw, it's the photo is striking on page P9 of today's New York Times. This is the New York edition. It may be a different page in different editions around the country. But it's a photo of Giuliani last night addressing, yeah, no, actually it's Bloomberg, but is the picture. But the bottom line is, they have replaced the podium, the traditional podium that you would have much larger than a podium, that thing that John Kerry was speaking behind at the DNC, sort of looked like the thing that this president speaks before, you know. They replaced it with a pair.
And I guess we have temporarily lost Mr. Hartman again. And while the modem retrains itself, I'm Rama Schneider, very, very briefly filling in for.
And we're back here. This is remarkable. During the break here, 20 after, I'm going to try dropping our rate, and we'll try a little slower telephone speed. Hopefully that won't retrain us often. But in any case, it is a. The podium that they were using last night looked just, it's got these two crosses on it, and this is not a Rorschach test. I mean, you take a look at this thing, and it's incredible. There's a big one, and then there's a little one right next to it. And at the same time, in today's Wall Street Journal, there is a full-page ad, God is not a Republican or a Democrat. A group of Christians, mostly across the United States, have run this ad, and they're saying, hey, enough is enough. In fact, here's the text of the ad. It says, Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, and others on the religious right claim that God has taken a side in this election and that Christians should only vote for George W. Bush. The Bush-Cheney campaign even told volunteers it was their duty to make church directories available to the campaign. How has the love of Jesus, the Prince of Peace, and his good news to the poor been distorted by the pro-war, pro-rich political agenda of the religious right? Our faith has been hijacked, and it's time to take it back. That's what this ad says. And full-page ad in today's paper. More than 40 Christian leaders and 40,000 faithful citizens signed a petition declaring that God is not a Republican or a Democrat, and that the religious right does not speak for them. I am so glad to see people of faith in this country, people who are, you know, are willing to stand up, who proudly stand up and say that they are Christians or Jews or Muslims or whatever it may be, but particularly the Christians in America, since that has been so, that religion has been so claimed by the Reich. Just as, you know, I mean, you know, when Adolf Hitler rose to power, when we lived in Germany, some friends of ours were elderly Nazis, right? I mean, they were Nazis way back. I mean, they were elderly, and actually one of them was still a Nazi. And they told us these stories, and of course we read about it later in Schurer's book, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. about how Hitler had declared a new Christianity, a revival of Christianity. It was the core, the base, the main shtick of his, or one of them, of his rise to power, as it were, in Germany. And it's just absolutely scary to me, frankly, to see a religious group using religion, using this absolutely human dimension. I mean, this part of humanity that we all share, the religious impulse, and even atheists, I would say, share it. Excuse me. Pardon me. Got to be careful what you talk about here. You start sneezing. I believe even atheists experience the mystical. I think the religious impulse, the experience of the transcendent, of that which is greater, is something that transcends any particular religion. It's and to see that basic human need, in my opinion, I realize there are some who would argue with it, but nonetheless, that basic, I would say, a basic human need to connect with something larger than you, to see that being twisted for political purposes, is, in my opinion, just a crime, a crime against democracy. James Madison, when he was president of the United States, loudly vetoed a bill that would have allocated funds to give to churches to care for the poor. And in his veto message, which is fairly well known, he said, I'm paraphrasing here, don't have it in front of me, but it's in my book, What Would Jefferson Do? You can also find it if you go to tomhartman.com and click on Articles on Democracy. There's one titled something like Judge Moore is in the title. Anyhow, Madison's quote is in there, and he said, you know, the government should never be giving money to churches, and if we collectively agree, we the people, that one of the things that we the people believe that we should do is care for the poor, then it must be done by government. Because if we're going to be giving money to churches to do this, this is a violation of the separation of church and state, and that's wrong. It's a dangerous precedent. It's a dangerous, potentially destructive thing. It's something that shouldn't happen. So here we have this petition and this article in the paper, or this full-page ad in the New York Times. The petition refutes claims by Jerry Falwell that evangelical Christians need to get serious about re-electing President Bush. Yes, that's what Jerry Falwell said. Evangelical Christians need to get serious about re-electing President Bush. Can you believe this? I mean, a religious leader claiming that God has a political opinion. I'm sorry, my God is not that small. My God is really the God of all people. But Jerry Falwell's clearly is not. Jerry Falwell's God is apparently a Republican. And the petition calls for all Christians to take back their faith. It appears in a full-page ad in Monday's New York Times, paid for 3,500 supporters of Sojourners, the national Christian magazine and organization that initiated the petition. You can find the petition at www.takebackourfaith.org, for those of you who'd like to check it out online. It notes that we believe all candidates should be examined by measuring their policies against the complete range of Christian ethics and values. The Reverend Jim Wallace, editor of Sojourners magazine, explained, this is where, you know, this is the bottom line for me. He says, when poverty has risen each of the past 3 years, that's a religious issue. See, this is the Matthew 25 conundrum that the religious right just love to ignore. The war in Iraq, says Reverend Jim Wallace, editor of Sojourners magazine, that's a religious issue. Taking care of the environment, that's a religious issue. He adds, this behavior by the religious right, ordaining George W. Bush as God's candidate, is theologically outrageous. How did the faith of Jesus come to be known as pro-rich and pro-war? They've tried to hijack our faith, and it's time to take it back. Absolutely time to take it back. More than 40,000 people have signed the petition online. That's the petition that is online at I just had the website. Oh, here it is, takebackourfaith.org. And I'm sure that that's going to increase with this ad in the newspaper. The ad includes 45 prominent signers.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I guess we're having some issues again with the retraining, and hopefully we'll be back with Tom very quickly. In the meantime, it's Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. There he is. All right, you're back.
Yeah, well, we're back. We're back, and we'll be back.
That really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.com.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the Republican National Convention at Madison Square Garden here in New York City. Amazing, we arrived last night. It would have been a three-block walk to where we were staying, but there was a bit of a riot going on. In fact, later on in a restaurant, a few hours later, we met with a couple of the, quote, rioters, end quote, and hopefully they're going to be calling into the program today because, boy, what a story they had to tell. But we ended up having to walk like 12 blocks out of our way just to...
All right, we're going back through another retrain, I guess, ladies and gentlemen, so please stay with us. The Tom Hartman Radio Program with Tom, live broadcast from Madison Square Garden in New York City. We'll be back very...
And you're back. So we're back. Hey, boy, that... Okay, the bumper music is still running, in fact. Okay, we're back. Anyhow, it was an interesting time. And it looks like this may not be the world's most stable phone line, but we're going to do our very best with it. 1-866-889-8894. Let's go to Freeman in San Diego. Hey, Freeman, what's up?
Hey, I can't believe I'm doing this, but I actually wanted to defend George Bush.
Okay. You know, actually, you and I may have the same opinion on this. Go ahead and say what you're going to say. Go ahead.
I just didn't think there was a whole lot to the we can win the war on terror, we can't win the war on terror. I think he was just getting at that there's always going to be terrorists and that we should just minimize the impact. Even though they've officially come out and said we're going to win the war on terror, I think he was just trying to imply that, hey, there's always going to be terrorists around. We're just trying to make us more secure.
Then why call it a war on terrorism? Why not call it a war on fundamental Islam?
I don't think it's necessarily a war on just fundamental Islam. And
why
course,
not
that
call
would be
it a
suicidal
war
politically
Osama bin Laden?
For them to say that. I think it's more a war on general terrorism, even though you cannot win the war. It's like you can't win the war on drugs, but you're still going to fight it and try and minimize the impact.
Yeah, see, this is here's my take on this. This isn't a war, and it never was. When Aldo Moro, as I recall his name, was the Prime Minister of Italy, was captured, stuffed into the trunk of a car, driven off, and murdered by the, as I recall, it was the Red Brigades in Italy back, 10, 12, 15 years ago. When the Grey Hand was operating in Germany, when you had the October or November 17th group, as I recall, in Greece, you know, killing people. None of those nations said, oh, we're going to declare a war on terrorism or a war on these people. What they said was, these guys are criminals. They're crooks. The whole nation needs to realize they're criminals. We need to hunt them down. We need to put them in jail and treat them like criminals. When you declare a war against somebody, I mean, there's a certain kind of bizarre sort of nobility associated with warfare. It's like we're the adversary. And by using the language of war, in my opinion, what Bush has done is he has given enormous credibility to Osama bin Laden and the other Islamic fundamentalists and fanatics that would follow him, and has made the world a much less safe place and alienated our allies in the process. And I agree with you that yesterday he was beginning to acknowledge the reality of that, but he's not going to change his rhetoric because the damage has been done. And of course, in the Muslim world, they all say, oh, yeah, war on terrorism. We know what that really means. That really means the Crusades. When it should have been dealt with from the very beginning as if it was a crime. Because it was. It was a heinous crime, one of the most terrible crimes there, but it was a crime.
I agree, but in this country, we always declare war on stuff. I mean, we've had war on drugs, war on cancer, war on AIDS. War, you know, it's like we always declare war on it. That's just
And look
to
how
be
successful they've been. Yeah, and look how successful they've been. I mean, you would think that we would have learned by now the stupidity of that. That this just is not how you make things happen. It's not.
Right.
Freeman, anyway. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Humboldt County's on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Oh, Tom, I'm thinking you probably are aware that you're not the only honest and rational voice there in that very deceitful, irrational setting. I was earlier listening.
Hopefully not. Dave, I got to ask you to hold on for just a second here. I don't have my clock in front of me that's accurate to the second, and so sometimes these breaks catch me a bit by surprise. I'm going to ask you to hold on over the break, and we'll pick you up on the other side.
Okay.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Tom Hartman here broadcasting live from the Republican National Convention in New York City. Stick around. We'll be right back. For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Can you put a price on the soul of a city? Hell yes, barks Michael Bloomberg, mayor of the Big Apple itself. Sounding like a hustler hawking stolen goods on a street corner, the mayor is telling any corporation that'll listen that he's willing, even eager, not only to sell the soul of New York City, but sell it on the cheap. His gambit is to peddle the naming rights of such city-owned landmarks as bridges, subway stations, tunnels, and parks, allowing the historic names of these public places to be plastered over with corporate monikers and logos. How charming. Halliburton could take the Brooklyn Bridge. Viagra could put its stamp on Central Park. Walmart could take the Grand out of Grand Central Station. Rupert Murdoch could rename the Times Square subway stop for his global empire. Donnie Trump could brand the Triborough Bridge, and Nike could change Union Square to Global Sweatshop Square. Bloomberg claims that his effort to corporatize the soul of the city is necessary because of severe budget constraints. Yet, pathetically, his sell-off will raise only some $78 million, at best. That's an insignificant fraction of New York's $45 billion annual budget. The saving grace here might be that Bloomberg's soul sale could fail for the lack of buyers. Take the Queens Midtown Tunnel. What corporate PR department wants to put the company name on a roadway that is constantly jammed to a standstill and cursed daily by thousands of commuters? Then again, maybe Rolaids would want it. This is Jim Hightower saying, Bloomberg might know the price of the city's soul, but he knows nothing about its value. Our public resources ought to be named for the uniqueness of their place, or for people we consider heroes or otherwise worthy of our public acclaim, not for faceless, faraway corporations. To fight such corporate intrusion into our civic lives, go to commercialalert.org.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
That's the main game. Hey, welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Are you there? Am I connected?
All right, Dave from Humboldt, if you'll just hold out for a couple minutes.
Here we go.
And we're
okay,
back.
We're back on. We're back. All right, we've... Welcome back, my friends.
And
the Tom Hartman program, we have Phil Kent here with us, who's a Georgia alternate delegate from Georgia. He's also the author of the book, The Dark Side of Liberalism. And Phil's going to sit here with us for the next little bit and also participate in taking our calls. Dave in Humboldt County. Dave, you were commenting before there. Rama, maybe you can just pot down the bumper music. I know you've already potted it off the air, but it's you can take it off our headphones, too. Dave, what were you saying?
Tom, I'm hoping you'll find another voice for sanity there in the form of Amy Godwin. She was on earlier, and she's been going around interviewing delegates, asking them two questions, which might explain a lot here. She's asking, one, have you seen the movie Fahrenheit 9/11? And each one says, oh, no, I would never see a movie like that. And her second question is, do you believe that Iraq caused 9/11? And each one is saying, oh, yes, I believe Iraq caused 9/11. So yeah, that may be some insight into the thinking of why we still have some of the Republicans that we do. I had another thought for you if you want it. Are you still there?
Dave, how you doing?
You liberals are shameless.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you mean we lost that? That didn't go out over the air?
Okay, all righty.
Well, yeah, we're still talking. Phil,
I just said Tom was shameless trying to sneak me into a theater.
Yeah, I was just suggesting to Phil, he hasn't seen Fahrenheit 9/11. He's insisting he's not being a coward about it.
Well, that's right. You know, I don't have to drink poison to know what it is.
Well, that's, you know, yeah.
Are you speechless?
You don't have to see truth to know what it is.
Now, you don't believe all that one scene there, Tom, where the children...
The scene that you saw?
The scene that I saw. I knew you'd be proud of me. The one scene that I saw, I'll give him 1.5 point there. But here Bush is with the children, and Michael Moore is trying to slam him for not being a decisive leader. I think George W. Bush did exactly the right thing when he was before those school children on 9/11. And he took a few minutes.
By freezing and chewing the inside of his gum for 7 minutes?
You don't want to panic. Of course, John Kerry was the one.
Have you actually seen the video of him doing that for 7 minutes?
John Kerry was the one who admitted
he was paralyzed. No, seriously, have you seen the video of him?
I think he was contemplating.
Have you seen the video of it?
Yes.
You saw the look on his face.
I just thought it was fine.
And,
he was contemplating what he was going to do. He didn't want to panic the kids like you would have, Tom. Yeah. Come on. What are you going to do, jump up and say we're under attack?
Well,
no.
I got to say, as I have taught teachers, I'm the president, actually, of the board of directors of a private school. I've written a bunch of books on education. I've taught. And I know how, as I think most rational adults do, to say to a classroom full of third graders, excuse me for a moment. If nothing else, excuse me for a moment. I have to use the bathroom.
Now, there was a press corps in there, and may I use the term, it was an ignorant press corps of what was going on when the plane hit the tower. You couldn't do that. That might be fine for a private event, and I won't dispute you on
there
that.
There was one
but
camera in the back. There
you
was
can't
no
do
press
that.
Corps.
There was no. The press corps was right outside the room, and there was a camera there, and that would not have worked. It would have worked normally. But you forget, Tom, this is the United States.
So in order to prevent...
He was paralyzed
in order to prevent 20 kids
paralyzed
from getting nervous...
You need to give more advice to Kerry.
In order to prevent 20 kids from getting nervous, this guy's willing to suspend any activity on the part of the United States for 7 full minutes while there's other jets in the air coming at us.
I want John
Kerry to
get...
And you think that's a good idea?
I want John Kerry to get Tom Hartman's book on how to handle things, because he and Daschle were paralyzed for half an hour.
And you think that... Okay. Dave, what was your second question? Dave in Humboldt County, California. What was your second question? Oh, Dave is gone. Okay, let's go to Mike in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Hello? We're live and kicking here in New York City. I'm here with Phil Kent, also, who's a conservative and a Georgia alternate delegate and the author of the book, The Dark Side of Liberalism. What's on your mind, Dave? Or Mike, rather?
I just wanted to pass along this... This updated news report here. This is out of the Associated Press from Nashville, Tennessee. Apparently, President Bush was speaking before the American Legion today, and he said, "We will meet today in a time of war for our country, a war we did not start, yet one that we will win," referring to terrorism.
Okay.
Sounds like a flip-flop
to me. Okay, hang on just a second. Mike,
yes.
We disconnected there for about 10 seconds. It keeps happening periodically.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell me again what you were saying?
Sure. Out of Nashville, Tennessee, the Associated Press, President Bush spoke today at the American Legion, and he said that we will win the war on terrorism. Sounds like a flip-flop to me.
Well, you know, he was in favor of, he was against the 9/11 Commission, then he was in favor of it, then he was against extending it, then he was in favor of extending it, then he was,
Well, let me jump in, because basically all of this was taken out of context on his comment yesterday. You're never going to win totally the war on terrorism until you change this medieval, evil Islam, the radical strain of Islam. So
I absolutely agree with you, which is why I think it's insane to use the word war.
Well, we have to kill them.
Why?
Because they're trying to kill us. It's very simple.
Why not? Well, there may be a few people who are, but you're going to kill a billion Muslims?
No. There's many moderate pro-Western
Muslims.
Then
why not try to convert them? Why not try to awaken them?
We'll have a renaissance.
Exactly. Christianity went through a renaissance about 400 years ago.
I agree with you.
Judaism went through a renaissance 2,000 years ago when they stopped animal sacrifice.
And then we will win when that happens.
But see, using the word war not only postpones that renaissance, it empowers those on the other side. That is the language of the 11th
century
Christianity.
Well, we agree on the renaissance and the fact that this religion needs to be reformed. You do have to use the word war when people are strapping on dynamite and trying to kill themselves and other innocent people and slamming planes into buildings.
Then why didn't we declare a war on Tim McVeigh? Tim McVeigh represented a large... There are thousands of people in the United States who share Tim McVeigh's point of view, who had read the Turner Diaries. We just, 4 months ago in Texas, arrested a guy with thousands of pounds of high explosives. It was in Texas. He was a white Christian, so it sort of didn't get mentioned, but we actually found a terrorist.
White Christian extremists, Tom, I hate to clue you in, are not trying to blow up World Trade Centers.
They blew up the federal building in what do you call it?
I think you should sleep soundly tonight, not fear the white Christian extremists. I think you should fear the Islamic extremists, my friend.
Yeah. Well, number one, I think that both of them
don't shift our priorities.
Both of them. So you're suggesting that the white
99% of the American people don't go along with the Timothy McVeigh philosophy.
Okay. Who's that? Rama's on the line.
We got Kodak on the line. He's on the road in Durham,
Kodak.
And we have another truck driver on the line, too.
Great. All righty. Mike, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good. You got us started here. We're talking, by the way, with Phil Kent. PhilKent.com is his website. And, Rami, you're just going to have to pot yourself up and tell us who the next person is on the line. I didn't write it down. I'm sorry.
Okay, Tom, first we got Kodak. He's on the road in Durham.
Kodak. Okay, in Durham, North Carolina. Hey, Kodak, what's up?
Yes, my question for your guest there is that there are so many issues other than Iraq. First of all, the reason why the American people are so upset, because it was the first time that we used preemptive war. But putting all that aside, there are so many more greater issues to address about just this administration. Is one of the connections between war and profiteering, whether or not it's a direct link, it's so many things that we can point to. Look at the secret hearings that were held by Dick Cheney and the Energy Commission with a known and soon-to-be-prosecuted criminal. Then let's look at the Halliburton thing where he's going to be indicted for bribing African officials. And then also,
Kodak, let me interrupt you here.
Kodak,
are you suggesting that this war was done just for profits?
No, the war was done. Well, my personal take on it, the war came about because Saddam Hussein was going to sell his oil based on the euro and not the dollar. If you really want to go speculating about what the war was about, I'm just talking about what this administration.
Do you remember when Israel took out Iraq's nuclear reactor?
Yeah, but that was 15 years ago.
Let him answer.
Go ahead, Kodak. Finish your point.
And let's look at all the other things that they have done that we know now is dishonest.
The
health care bill was designed by
the administration.
The people in the pharmaceutical industry. This is undisputed fact. Then they kept the rolls open on the vote, which is also indisputable. They bribe people. It's indisputable.
Is this a right-wing conspiracy that headed by the Pope? Who's behind all of this?
Well, hang on just a second, Phil. This is actually a conspiracy headed by the pharmaceutical companies and the Republicans who are in their pocket. I mean,
I didn't know that.
What rational reason would there be for legislators like Bill Frist, who made his family fortune in the medical industry, he's certainly no dummy about this, to put into law that the Pentagon can negotiate for the very best price on penicillin? They can collectively go to the drug companies and say, you know, we're going to buy 1 million penicillin tablets this year. What's your million tablet price? But Medicare, which is going to buy about 5 million, has to go to the drug companies and say, what's your five tablet price? That's the, you know, we're not going to be able to negotiate. What possible reason would that be?
Actually, you're going to be shocked. I agree with you on that, and I never was a big fan of the Medicare legislation anyway. I always thought it was a big socialist.
So you agree that the Republicans sold us?
That's the one area I disagree with Bush on.
Yeah. Okay.
They were dishonest with the amount of money that it was going to cost.
I agree with you. I agree with you as a conservative. They were dishonest on the amount of money, and I think that's a blot on the Bush administration. I say that as someone who's going to vote for George W. Bush because I agree with him on most everything else.
How can you, in good conscience, vote for someone that you know has so many questions around?
Because my party is trying to control the growth of government and fight a war on terrorism, where the Democratic Party has sold out.
Wait a minute. The Department of Homeland Security, which increased the size of the government. Once again, you're standing on
John Kerry
issues
vote for that?
Which has no merit.
Reluctantly. Yeah, good points, Kodak. We're not going to resolve this instantly, but hey, Kodak.
Yeah.
I could go on and on. And we got another call here I got to get on to. But I appreciate your call. It's always good to hear from you there. And good to know you're on the road in Durham listening to us, no doubt, on Sirius Satellite, I would guess. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Rama, you said we had another caller on the line.
Yes, this is Robert. He's another truck driver. He's on the road and has a question. Yes, Tom.
There we go.
I turned the wrong knob. This is Robert. He's on the road, and he wants to know how we got from Afghanistan to Iraq.
There you go. Hey, Robert, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're live and on the air. We're talking also with Phil Kent, an alternate delegate from Georgia, a good Republican here.
How you doing there, Tom?
Okay, Robert, this is Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman very briefly while the modem once again does its retraining on the signal issue. If you'll just hold on, the Tom Hartman radio program.
It was programmed.
And you're back. Okay.
We're back. Yeah, okay. Robert, welcome to the program. Your
hey,
question
Tom,
or comment.
How you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you, Robert?
Pretty good. I watched the convention. Well, I'm a truck driver. I listened to it on CSL like last night. And I kept watching Mayor Giuliani and go from 9/11 to Iraq. I couldn't get the big picture. How did we get from Afghanistan to Iraq? How did we get the war on terror from Afghanistan to Iraq? I keep on trying to see, is the war on terror is in Iraq or is it with Afghanistan, with Taliban? So what I'm saying, we spent $1.1 billion American dollar, hard-earned money, when we got health issues, we got no job, we got no insurance for people. Where is the president thinking about?
Yeah, in other words, why is George Bush so... Why, for example, did we write into the Iraqi Constitution and are we providing health care for all Iraqis at no cost? Why did we write into the Iraqi Constitution and we're providing Social Security and full retirement benefits for all Iraqis at no cost, but not for Americans?
Well, again,
Phil, why did your Republican Party do that?
Again, as a conservative, you know, I don't like some of these centrists in my own party, and that's socialism. So
centrists? This was Rumsfeld and Bush who put this stuff together.
I don't like it any more than you do. I think it's terrible. I think we ought to just kill our enemies, get the stabilized government, and get out.
Yeah, kill, just bomb them all, right?
And then let the Iraqi security.
One more question.
How many did we lose, Tom, here?
Go ahead, Robert.
One more question. We got a debt so far we can't even pay for the next 25 years. What are we going to do? China's going to have for the United States. We're going to be owned by a foreign country.
All right. Hey, Robert, how you doing on there? This is Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman again. I think the Republican National Convention is deliberately...
calling in Iraq than for America.
I know. I agree. All righty, we're back. So, Robert, in 30 seconds, what was your question? I'm sorry.
I was saying about the dead. They're not talking about the dead issue. We got a dead so big that we can't see. Republicans going to be conservative, concerned. Shoot, government haven't grown, but, hey, we got a debt so big over here, we can't even pay. Our industry is owned by foreign countries.
Yeah, there you go. Robert, thanks for the point. Well made. I want to move along here. We're just about out of time, and Rama says we've got a call from Lebanon, the country?
Yes, Tom, this is Gentleman Haney. He's from Lebanon, but he's living in the States now.
Oh, living in the States. Okay. Oh, every now and then we get calls from overseas because of the webcast. You never know. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, this is Haney. I've been here almost 35 years. So,
okay.
The comment I'm making, you have this guest that's talking about Muslims. They all should be killed. I mean, what kind of an arrogant guy is this? I mean, what is he talking about?
That's what I was thinking was a little strange here, but that's Phil Kent's view on it.
Thanks for defending me, Tom.
We'll get his take on it right after this. Haney, thank you for the call and for raising that, and Phil and I'll bring that back up right after this break. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Some are charging that there's a connection between Halliburton being awarded no-bid contracts in Iraq and the fact that Vice President Dick Cheney used to run the company. Of course there's a connection. Would you rather do business with a bunch of strangers who may charge less or with a dear, dear friend who knows what's in your heart? That's why Dick gets $1 million severance check from us at Halliburton every year. It reminds him who his friends are. Friends shouldn't have to compete for contracts. Friends don't need government oversight, and friends know who their friends are. Cronyism sounds like such a bad word. Try friendship instead. A really lucrative friendship. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaire!
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. It's been said that if you scratch the surface of any issue of social or economic injustice, you'll find the issue of corporate power and corporate personhood. Join me for the facts on September 24th. I'll be speaking in Portland, Oregon at the Unitarian Church on Main Street at 7 p.m. For more information, call Marcia at 503-665-3957. That's 503-665-3957.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Blueprints for the brains of dolphins give scientists new ideas about the way these creatures perceive their world. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The outside of the human brain is covered with wrinkled gray matter that's called the neocortex. It's something we share with other animals that are noted for their intelligence, and that includes dolphins, porpoises, and whales. Lori Marino has been studying the intelligence of these marine mammals for years. Marino is a neuroscientist at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. She says dolphins possess sophisticated intellectual capacities that include self-recognition and the ability to learn symbols. She says their neocortex is critical to this advanced intelligence.
We consider the cortex to be a structure in the brain that's involved in very high-level thinking, awareness, a lot of what we think of when we think of information processing and intelligence. And so we have been looking at the neocortex in dolphins and comparing it with neocortex in other animals, including primates and humans. And we've been finding something very interesting.
Dolphins and people can perform similar kinds of mental activities, but the physical organization of the dolphin's brain is quite different from ours. For example, the parts of their brains that deal with sight and sound are squished together in one place. They're not clearly separated as they are in the human brain. Marino says that might help dolphins find food when they're using echolocation. They listen for the ping of a sound bouncing off a distant target and try to find it visually at the same time. For a dolphin, sight and sound might not be two distinct senses. They might be merged together as one. EarthWatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Phil Kent has had to move along. I think Haney's question about Phil's suggestion that we should just go over and kill all the Muslims got him to leave and move along. I don't think that Phil, even though he's a good Republican and a delegate here, could have seriously been saying such a thing. But it does reflect, in my opinion, the sad mentality of so many of these so-called conservatives, so many of the Republicans here, that this is it's the Crusades all over again, that it's war, that we've got to kill, we've got to destroy. When, you know, yeah, okay, if there are people who want to kill you, you stop them, you put them in prison, you may have to, you know, go to war against them. But the bottom line really is that every single time we participate in something that is a violent confrontation, you're just creating, you know, how many kids in Iraq's parents, fathers have died now. We've killed, what, 30, 40,000 civilians? Think of a whole generation of children now that we've created who are not thinking well of us. This is not how you do it. It's just not how you do it. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Adrian on the road, is on the line. Hey, Adrian, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm great. What's up?
Well, your last caller, he's a truck driver. I'm a truck driver. All I have is a radio pretty much to keep me up to date on what the economy is and everything. He had made a comment that there are no jobs, but the unemployment ratio, according to what I heard on the radio, I don't have the numbers in front of me, are the same as when Bush took over office. If that's true,
well, the numbers have been jiggered. See, what happens is after 18 months, when you're no longer drawing benefits, you're no longer counted as unemployed, even if you don't have a job.
Well, but Bush took it over. Now, what did we have? We had WorldCom, and we had Enron, and we had 9/11, all within how many months of him taking over?
Yeah, all in aggregate, all of that stuff, the few thousand jobs that got lost in New York City as a result of 9/11, the few thousand jobs in the airline industry that went temporary as a result of 9/11, and Enron and WorldCom, it was a blip. It was a pimple on the American economy. It was, you know, a hundredth of 1%. It was meaningless. It's a great excuse for George Bush.
I mean, a lot of people lost their money in stocks, and that hurt the stock market.
Well, that's a whole different thing. You know, the stock market had been going through a tech-driven bubble, and that's something that was a greater issue. But that, you know, again, the reality is that unemployment is going up, and it's going up, in my opinion, largely because of our trade policy, not because of these other things. But anyhow, Adrian, I appreciate your call. We got to boogie along here at the top of the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program here at the New York Madison Square Garden, hanging out with all the cons.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy. Again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The Tom Hartman Program is broadcasting live from the RNC Convention at Position 3229 at the Madison Square Gardens Theater. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday will be on the air from noon to 3 p.m. Drop by for Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
It's coming through a hole in the air. Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
The Tom Hartman Program is broadcasting live from the RNC Convention at Position 3229 at the Madison Square Gardens Theater. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday will be on the air from noon to 3 p.m. Drop by for Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
From the brave, the bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet. Democracy is coming to the USA. Shores of me, past the reefs of greed.
Wonderful news, folks. The latest economic miracle has been found. Can you say nanotechnology? Better than high tech, we're told. Even better than biotech. Nanotech is the golden fleece, the next big thing. It involves lab technicians manipulating microscopic molecules to manufacture synthetic nanoparticles that can be used in computers, lubricants, and other products. These man-made substances are all the rage in economic development circles, with both federal and state governments pushing taxpayer money at this fledgling industry. Politicos in my state of Texas, for example, are all a-Twitter about getting a big piece of the nano action, planning to throw scarce public funds at corporations in order to lure them to choose Texas as a nano center. But if they choose us, what do we get? A boom, they promise. But remember the 90s, when they promised that high-tech would make everyone rich? Those companies were not profitable, however. The boom went bust, and the best high-tech jobs are now being sent offshore. So here we go again. Capital is madly rushing to nanotech, but the companies are not profitable, and no one is actually promising good jobs for Americans. Then there's a little hiccup that neither the politicos nor the industry want to talk about. These tiny nanoparticles are big-time toxic. A stunning new study of fish finds that the synthetic molecules cause severe brain and liver damage in the largemouth bass that were tested, and they wipe out whole populations of small organisms in water that are a crucial part of the aquatic food chain. Other studies have found that nanoparticles cause lung damage when inhaled, raising serious health issues for workers in nanotech factories. This is Jim Hightower saying, this time, before our leaders sink tons of our tax dollars in yet another high-tech, get-rich-quick scam, shouldn't they ask a few pertinent questions about the price we'll pay for this so-called progress? I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George V.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Live from the Republican National Convention, where, if anything can go wrong, it will. I guess it must be the last day of Mercury retrograde. Anyhow, we're gonna try and get a different telephone line during one of our breaks here, so we may vanish for a few minutes. Occasionally we do, but still, you know, the show must go on, as they say. One of the interesting things going on here at the RNC, a lot of the delegates are wearing little purple band-aids with little purple hearts printed on them. In fact, a guy named Morton Blackwell, who is a delegate from Virginia. Thomas Jefferson is rolling over in his grave as we speak. Morton Blackwell, a delegate from Virginia, has been passing out these heart-covered bandages. People are putting them on their chins and their cheeks. The message, of course, being part of the Big Lie campaign that even Bob Dole stooped to. You know, I don't think he bled very much. Like, you know, gee, let's go into combat, and if somebody doesn't get hit in the femoral artery or the carotid artery in the neck or whatever, if they're not gushing, then they don't deserve a Carrie turns out actually was bleeding rather substantially, but in any case, they're trying to make fun of this thing, and the Kerry campaign has denounced the allegations as a smear, and goes on to say the Republicans are mocking our troops. Anybody who is out there defending America, I think it's a good statement. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Rama, who's on the line?
Tom, this is Michael from Santa Fe.
Michael in Santa Fe. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, great lecture Friday night. I was there. It was awesome. You did a good job. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, listen, you were talking in the first hour about the podium, but you never got to what they did to the podium. You said something about two crosses, and then something else happened. So you could appreciate it.
Sure. It wasn't so much what they said. You know, basically what they've been doing is wrapping George Bush in the mantle of 9/11. You know, we were attacked. He saved us. He's the guy who's going to save us. Be afraid. Be very afraid. The whole thing. But just this extraordinary, powerful subliminal effect of turning the podium, the RNC podium, into something that looks like a church altar or a church... It's subtle, and yet it's not at all subtle.
Did they change it this morning or something, or have they kept it the same?
Well, I haven't seen it today. I've walked down through there this morning, but I was moving in a different direction. I haven't seen it. But if you take a picture and take a look at the New York Times, it may be on their website. I don't know. If you look at the New York Times, if you can look at a print edition. On page P9, there's a photo of Mayor Bloomberg standing behind this thing with the skyline of New York City on the projector screen behind him. And, if the guy was wearing robes, you'd say it looks actually kind of episcopal to me. It's very, very, very Christian. And
very
speaking as a Christian, Yeah,
right,
you're
bye.
Welcome, Mike. Michael, thanks for the call. You know, speaking as a Christian, I'm not about to say, let's trash Christians, but to try and make any religion the state religion, or to try and affiliate or really exploit. I think that, in my opinion, Christians across America are being cynically used by the Republican Party. George W., of course, cut his teeth on doing this when, in his father's campaign, he was responsible during his father's, George Herbert Walker Bush's campaign, for being the liaison with the fundamentalists out there. Rama, did you say we got another caller?
Yes, this is Pat. She's a truck driver on the road in New Jersey.
Hey, Pat, what's up?
Good morning, Tom.
Welcome to the program. Hey.
Through you, I would like to ask Republicans that are probably listening, why isn't it just simply, basically enough that President Bush lied about there being weapons and biotoxins of mass destruction? Why isn't that enough that he lied about everything concerning Iraq? And the Republicans keep defending Bush. His lies caused a war, caused us Americans to lose faith in the rest of the world, lose the trust factor throughout the world. And it isn't enough. The Republicans just keep defending him, keep coming up with excuses, and it's wrong. It's for his own selfish wanton gain, and it's just plain wrong.
I agree,
wrong.
And I can tell you, Pat, what they're going to say, and we've got another conservative guest coming up at the bottom of the hour. I mean, the Republicans wandering around here going, let me be on the radio, and so I'm willing to put them on. But I can tell you what they'll say, because they've got their talking points down, and Frank Luntz has done all his focus groups on it, and they figure. And what they'll say is, George Bush may have been wrong in thinking that there were weapons of mass destruction there, but the French were wrong in thinking that, the Germans were wrong in thinking that, everybody was, which of course.
All right, Pat, if you can hold on for a minute, too. We are busy with our modem retraining. This is due to that wonderful Republican put-together equipment in Madison Square Garden. Of course, I suggest we may not have ended up with any problems like this at the Democratic National Convention. But, you know, Tom, you're back.
And yeah, I'm back here. And you know, the reality is that if the rest of the world actually thought that, that Saddam had those things and that he was going to use them and that there was a real, then they wouldn't be sending in weapons inspectors. I mean, the whole thing was, it's an open question.
And what Tom was saying is the whole thing is it's an open question. I think what he's trying to get to the point that that with focus groups that they focus, and that's how you get the term focus groups, that people actually focus on words and what they mean to something. Okay, you're back again.
I'm back. Yeah, what are you, Rama, just stay on here. It's, maybe we should have a dialogue here.
That's all right, Tom. I'm one button away from filling in for you when you drop there.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I really do, and you do a great job. But, Pat, if you're still on the line there, she's gone. Okay, well, in any case, this is the line that they use. You know, the whole world thought that, and what they forget is that the whole world was saying, no, we don't think that. In fact, we had the largest number of demonstrations in the history of civilization. You know, people out there on the street saying, no, this isn't right. We don't want this going on. This is, you know, this is just, you know, it's just not right. So, anyhow, Pat, thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call in. The best convention money can buy here. Today's progress report, Center for American Progress, points out.
I hope the American Progress Report is pointing out what a shabby, and this is how the Republicans, I think, are running this country, too. And folks, as I'm filling in, this is Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman very briefly here. You're back again,
yeah.
Tom.
This is making me crazy, Rama. They're going to bring in another line here, and I'm going to have to give you that line. And anyhow, we'll deal with technical stuff. But the Associated Press, it's party time for trade associations, companies, and industry groups at the GOP convention in New York, and each is trying to outdo the next in gimmicks to lure movers and shakers, they say. Who is left out of this? Ordinary voters. As the Los Angeles Times writes in today's newspaper, Republican fundraisers are being rewarded with coveted slots in state delegations. Roughly one out of every five of Bush's top fundraisers, people who have raised more than $100,000, is a delegate here. One out of five. One out of five of Bush's top, you know, $100,000 plus fundraisers is here at the Republican National Convention as a delegate, squeezing out spots for ordinary grassroots advocates or activists. So, you know, it's the reality, of course, with the Democratic Party. It wasn't that overt. They're not doing the Rangers and all that. Yeah, there was some pretty heavy partying going on and paid for, but it's just with the Republican Party, it has become so blatant. You know, the question that I never did get around to asking Phil, our conservative guest, the last time around. You know, name one piece of legislation again that was mostly for the people. Arnold's trip. Arnold Schwarzenegger's here. Arnold's trip paid for by the drug industry looking for a veto. Corporations are ponying up about $150,000 to finance Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's trip to the convention, including a lavish party at Planet Hollywood. Taxpayers will be footing the bill for his security. Gee, what a surprise. Many of the contributions come from large pharmaceutical companies like Pfizer, who are actively lobbying the governor to veto four bills passed by the state legislature. Now, you get this? The legislature of the state of California has passed four different pieces of legislation now. Four different pieces of legislation that would allow people to buy pharmaceuticals from Canada, to buy cheaper drugs from Canada, four times now. And all of them, none of them have, you know, reached the governor's desk. He could veto all of them. And so the drug companies are saying to Arnold, well, you know, it's a... And remember Arnold, when he was campaigning, he said, I'm not going to take special interest money. And somebody said, but you're taking all this money from corporations. And he says, well, corporations aren't special interests. Special interests are unions. And it's like, what planet did this guy fall in from? Well, Planet Hollywood, of course, here in New York is where he's going to be doing this thing. So I guess that's the planet. So 1-866-889-8889.
Tom, you there? Wow, okay. We lost our train again, so we got Frank from Southern California on the line. If you just hold on, we'll be getting around to you briefly here. As people in the chat room point out, this is actually a conspiracy by me, Rama Schneider, very briefly here, filling in for Tom Hartman. And you're back, Tom.
And I'm back. We're here together, Rama, is really what we're doing today. And we might as well just, you know, call it that and be at that
okay.
rather than, you know, it's a, otherwise it's like, you know, talk radius interrupt us here. We had a caller on the I know we've only got a minute or so before a break, but we
okay.
had a caller on the line.
Yeah, here's Frank from Southern California. How you doing, Frank?
I'm doing just fine. But if you think you're so smart, I suppose you'd rather have the terrorists fighting us here in the United States.
Well, I think they've already tried, Frank. You hadn't figured that out?
Oh, boy, I'll tell you, you know what?
Frank hasn't figured that out.
Frank's trolling for phone calls there, Tom. He called me up, said he wanted to talk about the convention.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really a shame. You know, I'm sure Frank has an opinion. And my guess is he's actually thought it through and he's got some thoughts on it. And it's a shame that he didn't feel that he could share them. I mean, I hope that we're providing a comfortable environment for folks of Frank's viewpoint to share them. Frank, if you want to, you know, be a little more articulate, try calling us back. What the heck?
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.com.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Remember the election of 2000? Frightening. But we can all thank our lucky stock portfolios that when the shouting and those silly recounts were over, the Bush-Cheney team emerged with a clear 5-4 majority. Well, we don't want to go through that again, so you can bet your last $1 million that the next election won't be all messy. No dimpled ballots, no hanging chads, in fact, no paper at all. Thanks to our good friends at Diebold and their touchscreen voting machine, we can ensure that swing state swing our way. Just think, Chad will be just another country to liberate, and all Americans can look forward to 4 more wars. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaire!
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, Rama Schneider filling in for Tom Hartman here in the Tom Hartman radio program. And we're waiting to see if we can get through to Tom Hartman here. In the meantime, I'm going to try to see what we can do to fix this up. Tom Hartman radio program, may I help you? Yeah, okay, hold on. And I guess I'm going to fill in for a couple minutes here while we fix some technical issues. And I just want to start off with saying that the Washington Post, Tom was talking about how the world is viewing us just a few minutes ago. And from the Washington Post, the Republican Party is about, of course, to nominate George Bush by acclamation. In other words, there's no big surprise here as far as who's going to be getting what. Almost half of all American voters polled say they will be voting for George Bush come November, but in international online media, the vast majority of commentators are harshly critical of George W. Bush. On every continent, pundits are faulting Bush for his persona as well as his policies. Most dislike his conduct of war in Iraq, and many say his attitude toward the rest of the world is contemptuous, misinformed, and dangerous. And let's go right to the phones. I have no idea who's there. Who's there and where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Armin from Sarasota, Florida.
Armin, how you doing, Armin? Okay, what's on your mind here?
I have a solution to the welfare problem in this country.
Okay.
Very simple. Give everybody that's on welfare $400,000 a year salary plus automatic pay raises like George Bush gets.
Right.
Let them all get no-bid contracts.
Right.
Like Dick Cheney gets.
Okay.
And give them all government-paid-for health care like Bush and Cheney both get.
Right.
And let them have the exclusive right to sit down and create rules and regulations that give distinct advantages to the people that give them huge campaign contributions.
Well, and what?
Let me finish.
Why? What? Well, then, make it quick here. You're running low on time.
Then with all that newfound prosperity, they'll go out and spend that money into the economy, and all the stupid white boys will get paid because they'll probably pay them a lot more.
No fair picking on white people, Armin. We're not.
I said stupid white boys.
All right. Well.
And then I have a solution in the war. Quick.
Okay,
too.
You got 10 seconds. What's your solution here?
Instead of bombing them with bombs, bomb them with dollar bills and candy for the children and dry meals to add water for the adults and the children. And that would quickly put a better name on this country than what we're doing to them. And then
okay.
I got a solution for putting everybody back to work in
all
this
right.
country.
Well, thank you, Armin. Thank you for the call. Good ideas all. Rama Schneider filling in for Tom Hartman, and Tom will be back at the RNC very, very shortly. It's got to be a Republican conspiracy.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Excellent news, Americans. A new way to lie. In a nation that's gone from simple childhood fibs of my dog ate my homework to the more nefarious lies of a White House that has sent hundreds of people to die in Iraq on the false claims that Saddam Hussein was about to hit us with weapons of mass destruction, now we have new technology to extend the culture of lying to anyone with a cell phone. Yes, cell phones not only allow you to make calls or even take photographs, but also to join cells of cell phone liars who will help you cheat on your spouse, skip work, or you name it. Take the Alibi and Excuse Club, a network of some 3,400 subscribers, unknown to each other, who are willing to lie for you in exchange for you lying for them when they're in a pinch. Say you want to slip away for a weekend with a lover. What to tell your spouse? No problem. Just send out a message to the Alibi and Excuse group, and you're likely to get a volunteer who will call your spouse, posing as one of your bosses and explaining that you've been dispatched on an emergency sales mission to New York or Paris or Kalamazoo. You pay a fee to join the club, and you're also under some general obligation to return the favor when other members put out the call for a credible lie. Jumping on an entrepreneurial opportunity, others have found ways to add value to the lying phone schemes. For $2.99, for example, you can equip your cell phone to play the sounds of a rasping cough to simulate a lung infection while you're sitting on the beach sipping a cool one. You can also get honking horns and a screaming ambulance to simulate a traffic jam, thus explaining why you can't get home while you're actually chilling at a bar and watching the game. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, there could be glitches, such as if your spouse joins the same Alibi Club and takes your call for help in creating a lie so you can have an affair. Ouch.
Hi, my name is Sophie. For 5 years, I lived alone in this big house Joe and I built 35 years ago. Our girls grew up in this house. They visited every couple of weeks, and I loved seeing my grandkids, but most of the time I was on my own. Some days I didn't even go out. I just felt sad. Lonely, I guess. One day my daughter came over and said, "Get your coat, Mom. We're going for a drive." She wouldn't tell me where. When we got to the ASPCA, I got nervous. But once I met little Stevie, everything changed. Stevie's my cat. It's hard to express what a difference little Stevie's made in my life. It's mostly small things, like hearing his ridiculously loud purr. Stevie brought love back into my house. I may have saved his life, I don't know. But I do know that he made mine a lot brighter.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Program. Tom's down at the Republican National Convention right now, and the Republicans are busy having fun with us. And as I speak to you right now, I hear in the background, I hear modems talking to each other. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. And if you want to participate in the show, you can do that at 1-800-827-0555. And, Tom, we're on the air right now. You're back.
Okay, I'm back, and Woo. We're live. We've got a different phone line, but this one, I'm getting these CC errors. I don't know. Rama, I may need you to do some serious. Yeah, these are your headphones. We've got Rama. Can you hear us on that end?
I can hear you on this end very well right now, Tom.
Okay, great. It's so it's working. We've got Jeff Gannon on here. He's the Washington Bureau Chief with Talon News, TalonNews.com, their website. And Jeff is another one of these cons lurking around this place. A proud con, right? Let me potch up your volume control here.
Well, I'm not sure I'd call it that, but I...
You don't describe yourself as a conservative?
Right of center.
Right of center. Okay. Jeff, what do you see as the biggest issues in this election?
In this election, unquestionably, it's...
Okay, we've dropped our line again, and Tom is busy talking to a guest down there at the Republican National Convention. Hopefully we'll get a retrain.
Time.
Okay, Tom, we dropped you there.
Okay, we're back on.
You are back.
I think. Rama, are we back on here?
Yes, Tom, you are back on.
Okay.
You are.
This, during the next break, we're going to go back to the other line, and we'll try that. But this is. Here we are at the. It must be John Ashcroft got in here before I did, and had something set this up. Okay, we're talking to Jeff Gannon. Jeff, you were saying unquestionably national security is going to be the biggest issue.
Absolutely, I think so.
Okay, and you think that having a president who has managed to piss off the rest of the world against us is like a major good thing, right?
Well, I think it's important that the president demonstrate leadership against a threat that the rest of the world ignored for decades.
Oh, they did.
Well, I think they did.
So when Greece took out the November 17th terrorist group, that was ignoring terrorism?
But the job was never finished.
Yeah, they did. It no longer exists. When the Italians took out the Red Brigades, that was ignoring terrorism?
I definitely think that the Western world has never addressed the growing threat of Islamic extremists.
So when the Germans took out the Grey Hand, which was an Islamic terrorist group that was operating in Germany 15 years ago, that was ignoring terrorism?
But definitely Al-Qaeda was operating in Germany. One of the cells that attacked us on 9/11 spent years in Germany preparing for the attacks. So,
sure.
So you can't say that they... were aggressively pursuing the terrorists.
Right, but my point is that all of those terrorist groups that had arisen in Europe and represented serious threats and killed people. I mean, in Italy, they killed the prime minister. It's the equivalent of killing the president. Aldo Moro stuck him in the trunk of a car, took him off, shot him in the head.
Well,
and instead of saying,
We're going to declare war on these people.
And demagoguing the issue and so polarizing it that that everybody on the other side says, you know, I think I'll join the bad guys, they're saying.
Well,
they said, these are criminals. And everybody says, you know, they're just a bunch of criminals. They're a bunch of crazies. And they got them. They took them out.
Well, none of those attacks were anything close to what happened to us on 9/11. Those were acts of war. The other things that happened were activities that took place. I mean, political assassinations, small actions. This was an act of all-out war.
This was 18 guys, 15 Saudis with box cutters. Come on,
representing a worldwide network that we're still trying to dismantle.
Well, and actually, what George Bush is doing is he's acting as a recruiting poster for you. I mean, people within his own administration will tell you, and will tell you candidly, very straightforward, that Al Qaeda, or at least the people who are, you know, think well of it, have been growing since we invaded Iraq.
Why?
Oh, dear. So they were in the middle of getting a chance to talk with a real live Republican conservative there at the Republican National Convention. I mean, I'm kind of surprised that they have real live conservatives there. I thought with all this talk,
side. And you think that the Islamists out there are going to say, well, you know, we'll pick the Christian West side.
Well, there have been some that have. Okay. There have been nations that are supporting the war on terror. I think Pakistan, the tremendous transformation that's occurred in Pakistan is...
You mean the transformation to over 80% of the people in Pakistan saying that they would rather see Osama bin Laden running their country than Musharraf?
Well, but Musharraf is still in power.
Because he's got the guns. I mean, the guy's a military dictator. You're supporting a military dictator here. He offed a democratically elected president.
Well, the politics of that region and the greater Middle East have always been for thousands of years. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. And
what does that have to do with it?
Well,
I mean, India's had a functioning democracy right next door for quite some time.
But the truth of the matter is that
Pakistan had a functioning democracy until Musharraf came along and offed the president.
But they also achieved nuclear capabilities under that same government that was unopposed by the West. And we should have done something about that a lot sooner.
Right, and that nuclear capability that's held by Pakistan is now held in a country that the majority of the citizens of that country think, as a result of George Bush's actions, that they should be killing Americans.
Well, I haven't done a poll on that. That's you're telling me information that I'm not aware of.
I'm quoting ISI, the Pakistani Intelligence Service.
Okay.
I think they're pretty solid. Rama, did you say we have a caller on the line? Maybe Rama. Are we on the air, Rama?
Tom, we are on the air now. I'm sorry. You caught me right when I was answering the phone there. Yeah, you have a caller,
okay.
George from Los Alamos.
Okay, George in Los Alamos. Hey, George, what's up?
Actually, it's Chuck, and I got a question for the RNC. They're running it. They're not in Botswana. They're in New York. I've listened to Knicks games and Rangers games for years from Madison Square Garden, and this is the most pathetic radio coverage I've ever seen. And if this is any indication on how well they run infrastructure, I don't see how they're going to run the country.
All righty. We're going to wait for a retrain. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman quickly here. And, you know, this this could explain why the country's going to heck in a handbasket, to say it politely. Let me see. Do we still who do we have on the line? Chuck, you still there?
I'm still here.
All right. Well, hey, Chuck, well, while we're waiting for Tom and his guests, maybe if we can get a retrain on this.
Sure.
What was your comment there about the equipment down there?
Well, my comment is that anybody who's been to New York knows that Madison Square Garden is one of the greatest venues on the planet. You listen to the radio broadcasts of the Knicks games, the Rangers games, and it goes all over the country.
Yeah.
And the Republicans have had 2 years to set this up, and how many million dollars, and they can't make the outflowing radio work? This is not inspiring.
You're right. There's no confidence inspiration in there at all, is there?
I mean, it's no wonder. They must have done an outsource to Halliburton for this or something.
I think it's kind of, you know, look, I, in a way, I get some ambivalent feelings. One side of me says, look, this is funny because you're right. This is like Afghanistan or Iraq. You know, this is like the economy. This is like the Medicare bill. This is like take your pick of anything's going on in the country right now. And the Republicans just can't do it right, but they're going to tell you how well they did it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, the whole thing is ludicrous, Rob. I mean, this is just. Did we have this problem at the DNC in Boston with all the telecommunications? No.
I didn't hear of any problems at all. But you know what I think? I think they take certain folks and they put them at the bad end of the table. You know, I've seen this.
It's funny you should say that because I'm actually making some tapes for some of the right wing stuff, and I'll bet you they don't have any outages this morning. Really early, and it was really fascinating because you want to know who got cut out the most was every time Karl Rove started getting talked about.
Right.
On Amy Goodman's program, it dropped.
Oh, really? Big surprise there, huh? Wow.
So I've got myself a sheet of graph paper, and I'm a scientist, and I'm going to keep some running totals on this.
Yeah, well, it'll be awful curious to see. I guess I'm going to be with folks up until about coming up towards the top of the hour. Right now we're 16 minutes before the hour. So if you want to join in the conversation with me, 1-866-889-8894, Rama Schneider, temporarily sitting in for Tom Hartman, who is being subjected, apparently, to all sorts of, I don't know, he's being subjected to underhanded hardware issues down at the Republican National Convention right now. Well, Chuck,
applied incompetence, Rama.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, Chuck, I want to thank you very much for giving us a call, okay?
Okay, bye now.
You have a great day, and thanks
you
a lot.
Too.
Yep. All right. What the heck? All right. Here we are. You're live on the air on the Tom Hartman radio program. Rama Schneider, who's this and where are you calling from?
Hi. My name is Pat. I just called a few minutes ago. I would like to bring another point up to Tom during this time while he's at the convention.
Okay.
And that is, if there were no weapons of mass destruction of any sort found in Iraq throughout, proven by the, what is it called, the committee that went over there, the weapons inspection group?
I mean, everyone that's gone over there to look, including hundreds of thousands of U.S. troops, has not found diddly squat. So, yeah, you can take your pick.
I'd like to remind everybody that if there was found, then how come we were attacked with the anthrax? And they didn't have any.
Yeah. Okay, Pat, your phone's breaking up, so I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to try to take a guess as to what you're getting at there. I think what people, first off, I got a wonderful quote running around somewhere, and I don't know that I have it with me, but it's from David Kaye recently, who was in front of the U.S. Senate testifying about the 9/11 Commission results. And one of the things that he said to the David Kaye said to the Senate was, and I'm going to paraphrase, this is pretty darn close to an exact quote, every successful president has had a way to check with his left hand what his right hand is doing. I don't mean that with political left and right. I mean, in other words, every successful president has had a way to verify that what one person is telling him is actually correct, and he does this by going in a different route entirely, and he talks to other people. And this is what happened, Pat. George Bush, one way or another, was given all the authority to make all the decisions, and he made these decisions, and he never bothered once to double-check his facts. I mean, this is a man who has admitted he doesn't read newspapers. He barely scans the headlines. He talks to his other people who he assumes read newspapers. So, You know, David Kay went over there a true believer not very long ago to Iraq, and he was going to find the weapons programs. And he came back, and I'll tell you, I've heard a couple of his speeches, David Kay's speeches, since he came back from Iraq. And he's actually very bitter in some respects. He feels very misled by the Bush administration or by the intelligence. He keeps trying to stop it just below the Bush administration, but it ends up with... You know, that's the way David Kay is. And he comes back and says, hey, guys, guess what? There's nothing there, you know. And so he's in front of the 9/11, he's in front of the Senate talking to the 9/11 committee and, you know, mentioning all this equipment. Take it for whatever it's worth. It's just not a pretty picture. And yeah, the anthrax attacks, let's remember, they were the anthrax attacks were a domestic attack. They were not an attack by a foreign agent, by a foreign nation, as far as we can tell. Everything that they've said about the anthrax attacks would lead one to believe that it came from somewhere inside the United States. And there are no weapons of mass destruction. I've talked to some Fox listener not too many weeks ago who is trying to call me on this. My wife and I, we do a small weekend broadcaster. And I was bringing up the fact that there was no weapons of mass destruction found in Iraq. This is a Sunday evening show we got. And let me just plug it, GRRradio.com, GRRradio.com. And this guy calls up, this young man calls up, and very earnestly says, well, I've got a story. And he gave me a link to a Fox News story. And it was a story I had read about them supposedly finding that one shell that had traces of sarin gas in it. Well, as it turns out, that the traces of sarin gas was probably old. They found no indication that the shell, which had been used, was manufactured anywhere after 1991, which incidentally would be after the Iraqis were supposed to have stopped making all that stuff. So even in the newspapers, when you read it, and that was a Fox story that admitted that shell had to have been pre-1991 manufactured. Even the newspapers are saying, heck no! There are no weapons of mass destruction. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman, and we'll be back.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. We're going to catch the folks at WTKG AM 1230 Grand Rapids doing something right on September 17th when I'll be live with Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 o'clock. It's at the corner of Knapp and the East Beltline. Drop by early for coffee, donuts, and a chat, and then you can listen to the show. At 4 p.m. right after the show, I'll be heading over to the Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-242-6599.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Yellowstone's wolves teach a lesson about the complexity of nature, according to the author of a new book. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. By 1926, wolves had been exterminated from the Yellowstone region. They were considered a nuisance and a danger to livestock. But author Chip Ward says eliminating the predators set off a chain reaction, starting with elk, their favorite prey.
Elk became kind of fat and lazy, and they hung out where the living was easy instead of being dispersed and pushed around the land by packs of wolves. As a result of that, they chewed those landscapes down to the nubs, and when they eliminated the willow and aspen seedlings along the riverbanks and stream banks, the beaver went away. And, of course, when you eliminate the beaver, you radically change the landscape because beaver create wetlands that provide niches for all sorts of other animals, insects, birds, fish, reptiles, amphibians, the whole range.
Ward has written a new book called Hope's Horizon. It's about our growing understanding of the importance of complete ecosystems, and Yellowstone proves the point. The National Park Service began to reintroduce wolves in 1995, and now 174 roam the park. Elk make up 83% of their diet. The wolf reintroduction program is still controversial, but Ward says people should know how successful it's been in ecological terms.
The fact that we are reintroducing wolves, for example, is something that our grandfathers would find absolutely unfathomable. So we're making progress there. I think what we're not doing very well is communicating why these things should happen and why they make sense for all of us. And that will take a little bit longer.
That's Chip Ward, author of Hope's Horizon. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nasty.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman radio program. Hopefully we're getting our technical problems resolved here. We've gone to plan B, and I think that this one's going to hold. I think this is going to take care of it. We're talking with Jeff Gannon, who's the Washington Bureau Chief of Talon News, www.talonews.com, the Talon News Service, a conservative news service, feeds stories to, all over the Internet, right? You've got millions of...
It goes everywhere. At least a million people daily read our news.
All sorts of folks all over the place. Jeff, let's talk for a minute. We have talked about, you said that you thought that security in 9/11, and we sort of bounced that around. Did you want to wrap that up? I know that you had a final thing to say.
Well, I just think that that the individual acts of terrorism, as we had discussed previously, some examples that you said had been dealt with, is, I think, it's significantly different from the global war on terror and the Al-Qaeda network, and that had been able to develop over the years, and we really, nobody did anything about it, our country included. We just ignored the warning signs that an attack was going to take place on American soil.
So what do you think is motivating these people?
It's a combination of things, but most importantly, I think it's this culture of death that they embrace.
Did you ever read Osama bin Laden's declaration of war in the United States? It was published in the New York Times back in 1998.
No.
In it, he said that if we didn't get infidels out of Saudi Arabia, we built an Air Force base there, and the Prince Sultan bin something or other in 1991 for the Gulf War. If we didn't do that, that he was going to attack us. But that was the bottom line. And of course, George W. just pulled him out. What, last month? So he finally did what Saddam asked him, or what Osama asked him to do. But Osama was pretty articulate in saying, you know, it's not a culture of death. It's not that we hate you. It's we hate your foreign policy.
And that's a political goal that they're seeking. But the measures that they're willing to take to do that, attacking innocents in buildings and on their sitting at their desks.
Yeah, this is criminal behavior. It absolutely is. Yeah. I mean, we should be pulling together Interpol and every country in the world to hunt these people down.
I would certainly like to see that. I think you're right.
Yeah. Okay. Well said. Talking with Jeff Gannon of the Talon News Service. TalonNews.com. It's the Tom Hartman radio program with Rama Schneider valiantly holding down the fort there in Montpelier in Vermont as we are here broadcasting live from the Republican National Convention in New York City.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The Tom Hartman Program is broadcasting live from the RNC Convention at position 3229 at the Madison Square Gardens Theater. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday will be on the air from noon to 3 p.m. Drop by for Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
It's coming through a hole in the air. Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
The Tom Hartman Program is broadcasting live from the RNC Convention at position 3229 at the Madison Square Gardens Theater. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday will be on the air from noon to 3 p.m. Drop by for Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
From the brave, the bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet, democracy is coming to the
In the news, Donnie Trump, the trumped-up corporate personality who poses as a hard-headed business guru on a television reality show, is steadily sinking into an entirely different reality of his own making. Trump Hotels and Casino Resorts, Inc., Donnie's real-life corporate empire, has lost $66 million in the first half of this year, double what it lost last year. This is on top of the heavy burden of a $1.8 billion debt that is squeezing the financial life out of the company. Thanks to Trump's managerial incompetence, his business has never managed to make a profit in its decade of existence, and it's now teetering on the precipice of bankruptcy. His performance is so wretched that he's being pushed by his investors to step aside as CEO. Yet, there's the Donald, still posturing as a savvy corporate boss on his TV show. This guy has an ego bigger and more gaseous than Neptune, and the fact that he's a managerial wreck waiting to happen won't deter him from strutting around like a cock of the corporate roost. Indeed, rather than tending to his business woes, he's now launching a new magazine to market himself as a business whiz. Modestly titled Trump World, the magazine will focus on, quote, his personal interests, all of which can be summed up in one word, himself. The PR push for this bi-monthly mag says that the Donald will dish out his, quote, business and real estate advice, as well as offering helpful tips on such mundane matters as how to hire a butler, what to look for when buying an island, and where to stay while in Bora Bora. Incredibly, when he was asked why his own mug was not on the cover of the first issue, Trump airily declared, "I'd like to keep a very low profile." This is Jim Hightower saying, oh, sure, a guy who has a new magazine to hype his Donaldness 24/7 really doesn't want to be part of the celebrity chase.
Hi, my name is Sophie. For 5 years, I lived alone in this big house Joe and I built 35 years ago. Our girls grew up in this house. They visited every couple of weeks, and I loved seeing my grandkids, but most of the time I was on my own. Some days I didn't even go out. I just felt sad. Lonely, I guess. One day my daughter came over and said, "Get your coat, Mom. We're going for a drive." She wouldn't tell me where. When we got to the ASPCA, I got nervous. But once I met little Stevie, everything changed. Stevie's my cat. It's hard to express what a difference little Stevie's made in my life. It's mostly small things, like hearing his ridiculously loud purr. Stevie brought love back into my house. I may have saved his life, I don't know. But I do know that he made mine a lot brighter.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, live from the Republican National Convention. Still trying to hold a solid line. Who knows? And with Rama Schneider there in Vermont, ably holding down the board. Hello, Rama.
Hello. I'm here. I got the fort.
Good to hear that you're there. It's where did the story go here, Louise? We already did that. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Across the country today, veterans and first responders spoke out against President Bush's policies. I don't know if you saw this. This is the event of the news. Across the country today, veterans and first responders spoke out against President Bush's policies, which they said are depriving veterans of necessary care and shortchanging police officers and firefighters. The veterans and first responders spoke out in Washington, Florida, get this, throughout Maine, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, West Virginia, Arizona, New Mexico, Iowa, and Missouri, with more events planned throughout the week. Dr. Edwin Savlov, a World War II and Korean War veteran, and a former surgeon at the Nevada Veterans Administration Hospital said, and I quote, The Bush administration has deprived veterans of proper care. They're waiting longer for appointments because there's not enough money to hire physicians, and the treatment that is delivered is delayed or full of shortcuts. It's just not right that these veterans, myself included, are not getting the treatment they deserve. End quote. Well, the reality behind all this, the why, something you're probably not going to hear on the evening news from the Republican National Convention here, is that the Bush administration underfunded veterans programs by nearly $4 billion in its most recent budget, and a secret memo obtained by news organizations reveals Bush's plan to cut an additional $910 million in funding for veterans programs. Wisconsin veteran Walter Orm says, given that our country's at war, the Bush administration's lip service-only policy of protecting the homeland just doesn't cut it anymore. In the midst of this, actually, I want to come back to this in just a minute. A few more details on this, but I just have to share with you this one thing. Rama, have you heard this new ad from Deserters for Truth?
Deserters for Truth. Can't say that I have, Tom.
This is incredible. This is a new ad. It's desertersfortruth.com, I believe, is the website. And this thing is getting out there. Here, let me just play this clip for you.
If you have any questions about George Bush's National Guard service record, just ask the men who didn't serve with him.
Now, they got pictures of these guys, you know, these guys talking, and they got their names, and, you know, these are all people who deserted.
I did not serve with George Bush. I did not serve with George Bush. I did not serve with George Bush. I know George Bush is lying about his service because I was skiing with him in Aspen the whole time.
His account of where he was and where he wasn't are as different as being at a frat party and being in the military. Literally.
George Bush cannot be trusted to be there for America, especially if there is anywhere near an Air Force base.
We got so drunk.
We got so drunk.
We got so drunk.
George Bush is a deserter. But he does like to party.
But he does
One
like to party.
One time he brought all of us 5 lap dances each. I think this was the third time we were AWOL together.
He lacks the capacity to lead the country. He did lead us once on a street through the Quad, though.
You should have seen some of those strippers.
When the chips are down, you could always count on George Bush to pick up more, along with a new keg.
George Bush talks about doing his duty. But does he ever talk about the time that he lit his duty on fire and threw it at the drill sergeant's house?
He dishonored his fellow deserters. He most certainly did.
George Bush has betrayed the men and women who didn't serve with him. I am proud to be a deserter.
The fact is, he was the greatest deserter I ever saw. Excuses, family connections, drugs. He had it all. George Bush was more than willing to put himself in harm's way every time he got behind the wheel.
Every time he got behind the wheel.
George Bush shirked his duties right here in America, and now he's denying it.
This is great. The rest of us went to Canada, but George Bush shirked his duties right here in America, and now he's getting away with it.
That's funny.
DesertersForTruth.com. These guys are really upset that George Bush is sullying the name of deserters. By the way, there is a webcam here at Radio Row here at the Republican National Convention, and they just stuck it on my booth here, so you can see me at www.radiorow.net. RadioRow.net, and you get to see behind the curtain. You know, what's going on behind that curtain, and who is that man back there? The strange things. Yeah, the people in this spot, by the way, John McGuire says, I did not serve with George Bush. Ted Brody, I did not serve with George Bush. Michael Janssen, I did not serve with George Bush. Of course, they all, you know, had to say that I did not serve with George Bush because nobody served with George Bush. I mean, there have been awards offered. Anybody who can come forward and say, you know, yes, I can prove that I, or not even prove, I remember George Bush. They haven't been able to find him. So, it's just remarkable. This is one of my favorite pieces. This is DesertersForTruth.com. You can find more information about them. And in the meantime, we find out that the anti-carry book, this Unfit for Command, the Swiftboat Veterans book, which has been flogged mercilessly in the media by Bob Novak, particularly on Crossfire, where he's the co-host. He's one of the co-hosts. And he got John O'Neill on the air, you know, and he calls him a real patriot and all that. What he hadn't revealed to the world is that his son, Alex Novak, is director of marketing for its publisher, Regenery Press, for the publisher of this collection of bizarre lies, the Swiftboat Veteran, or the Swift, what do they call it? Unfit for Command is the title of the book. Oh, my. But back to the Bush administration, since we are here at the Republican National Convention, and hi there, RadioRow.net, we are here at the Republican National Convention. Let's look at some of the details here of what's happening. In 2003, this from Americans Coming Together, by the way, this information. In 2003, nearly 20,000 fire departments across the country applied for $2 billion in grants under the Assistance to Firefighters grant program, but only $750 million was available. 20,000 fire departments asking for $2 billion. Only $750 million is available. That's, you know, less than half, about a third. Instead of boosting the funding to meet this need, right? I mean, do you have it here now? The fire departments across the country, they say, you know, you really want us to be the first responders. You really want us to protect the homeland. You really want us to protect America. You know, we'd be glad to do that. Here's what it's going to cost. It's going to cost $2 billion. And right now you're funding us at the rate of $700 million. So how does George Bush respond to that? He says, well, we're going to cut that down to $500 million. Yeah, seriously. They cut it by 33%. And yet, you know, last night on TV, you got all these cons going, he's doing such a great job. He's helping us. He's increased the budget for Homeland Security. Well, that's because they created this whole new department. But, you know, how much of that money is getting down to firefighters, to the actual local Homeland Security? Virtually none. Did you see Paul Krugman's column in today's New York Times? This is remarkable. He points out that Fallujah, which, you know, I don't have the story right in front of me here, but it's back in the office. But Fallujah for, what, a month now? Maybe a month and a half has been in a situation where basically it's under Islamic rule. Fallujah is simply not a safe place, you know. It has become its own little Islamic republic. Where if you get a haircut, you get punished. Where if you drink alcohol, they drag you through the streets and whip you. Where people can be stoned for, literally, I mean, with stones, right? For adultery and for pretty much any crime. Turns out that Fallujah is not the only city
As Paul Krugman points out, while we were focused on Najaf, virtually all of western Iraq fell firmly under rebel control. Representatives of the U.S.-installed government have been intimidated, assassinated, or executed. Intimidated, assassinated, or executed. Towns like Samarra have also fallen to the insurgents. We are, the bottom line here, if Paul Krugman's reporting is to be believed, and I don't see why it wouldn't be credible. Hey, Louise, you ought to get out here and RadioRow.net. You could just smile at the camera. You don't want to do that, huh? Okay. Well, maybe it's a wide-angle lens. Maybe you can see right now. We're losing the country, just like we've lost Afghanistan. We now control Kabul and, you know, little pieces here and there. But by and large, you know, with the very small force we have there, most of Afghanistan is back to the burqa. And the question is, how soon before Iraq goes back to the burqa? President Bush, Paul Krugman points out, says that the troubles in Iraq are the result of unanticipated catastrophic success. Catastrophic success? Well, yeah, we won the war so much quicker than we expected that we, a year later, haven't yet figured out how to plan for having won the war. Now, you know, let me think about this one for a minute. In other words, we weren't expecting to quickly win the war, but we were expecting that, you know, way down the road we would win the war, but then we did, but there was no planning for it. Maybe you can explain to me what catastrophic success is. Robin, did I just hear you say that there's a call on the line?
Yeah, we got a couple of callers on the line. In the chat room, too, Tom, they want you to know. Of course, as soon as you gave that RadioRow.net, they all went there, and they want you to comb your hair, okay?
Comb my
hair? Comb your hair.
Sorry about that. Okay.
All right, let's start. You want a phone call here?
Sure, yeah, let's go for it.
Okay, this is Jeff from Santa Fe. You're on with the Tom Hartman, Jeff.
Hey, hello? Jeff. What's up, Jeff?
Tom?
Yeah.
Yeah, hi, it's Jeff from Santa Fe.
Hey, Jeff.
How you doing?
Great, what's up?
I wanted to call when you had that first Republican guest on. I thought that was pretty funny. The hello?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm getting some kind of weird feedback.
Turn off your radio.
My radio's not on.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't know where it's coming through the phone.
Yeah, our phone lines have just been weird all day.
I know. They've been
coming up on a break.
Anyway,
here, so.
he defended Bush, saying that he sat there for 7 minutes because he didn't want to upset the children.
Yeah,
it's just another excuse for Bush and the fact that they don't want to. It doesn't look like they want to look at the truth.
Yeah, I agree, Jeff. That's not just an excuse. That's a pathetic excuse.
It's a terrible excuse.
I'm losing adjectives. Anyhow, Jeff, thanks for the call. It's Tom Hartman. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere. For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. We've all heard the phrase, use it or lose it. Well, according to a study just published in the journal Neurology, people with mentally challenging work seem to be less likely to develop Alzheimer's disease than those working in physically demanding jobs. Researchers suggest lifelong stimulus maintains a reserve of brain cells and strengthens connections between neurons.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. You can drop by RadioRow.net and see us live and on the air. Broadcasting from the Republican National Convention at Madison Square Garden. Thank you. Thank you, Louise. Oh, what a great time we're having here. Stumbled across the most amazing little riot last night, which got very little coverage. I knew something was wrong as we were walking along, and a guy walking by said, you know, he didn't have to hit me with a baton just for that. You know, something is wrong. 4 years ago yesterday, the lie of the day here, this from Jim Jordan, the daily traffic report, the lie of the day. 4 years ago yesterday, George Bush said, and I quote, I'm going to ask Congress to bolster the first-year aid from $3,300 to $5,100 per recipient of the Pell Grant to encourage children to not only attend a higher education, but to complete the first year of higher education.
All right. I guess Rama Schneider filling in for Tom Hartman again rather briefly. The Republican plot to keep intelligence off the air kicked into high gear once again. So
broken his promise to increase the maximum Pell Award to $5,100. But Bush's budgets have frozen the Pell Grant for the past 3 years. Keep in mind it was 4 years ago today that he said that he was going to do this. And for 3 years ever since then, he has frozen them. Today, the maximum help a student can get from a Pell Grant is $4,050 a year, which covers less than 40% of average tuition costs.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't. So average tuition, boy, average tuition's really gone up in the last couple of decades. And Bush administration sought to cut or eliminate Pell Grants for 184,000 students. 184,000. The Congressional Research Service, this is from the American Council on Education, the Congressional Research Service released a report recently analyzing the impact of the department's change on the existing formula for allocating financial aid. A new qualifying formula for the grant could mean awards would be cut by up to $270 million. If the changes are approved, some 84,000 college students nationwide will no longer qualify for a Pell Grant, with an estimated 100,000 receiving less money than in previous years. Well, you know, when you think about it, I mean, this is really just kind of consistent with the con world view, which is to say that what society? We don't need no stinking society. We are not. I am not my brother's keeper. You know, the kind of world we live in, how things are, it's really not my issue. I've got mine. Well, yeah, I got it with public education, and I do use public streets, and I do want there to be a fire department and a police department, and I would like there to be a court system, but I got mine. 4 years ago today, President Bush also said, "My economic plan pays down short-term debt." When you lockbox Social Security money, it pays down short-term debt. He said this on CNN on live chat, Hampton, New Hampshire, on the 30th of August, the year 2000. The truth is that Bush broke his promise, instead spent nearly $500 billion. We're talking $500 billion, $500 billion of the Social Security Trust Fund. During the three fiscal years under the Bush administration, $482 billion of the Social Security Trust Fund, $482 billion went for general government operations. That's $482 billion that should be in my retirement fund. It's gone. In his first three budgets, Bush and Congress used $480 billion in excess Social Security payroll taxes to fund basic government operations, about $160 billion per year, notes Slate magazine. And the 2004 deficit, $455 billion, $700 billion worse than the administration promised. What a mess. But here at the Republican Convention, you wouldn't know it. Everything just seems peachy. This is Tom Hartman, 29 minutes past the hour. Stick around.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Time for another report from the wide, 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 wild world of sports. Today's feature, where are we? I don't mean where does your team rank in the standings. In today's corporatized sports world, the question of where are we is a literal one, as in what city are we in? Stadiums, arenas, and so forth no longer bear recognizable names, but instead are branded with corporate logos that are anywhere and nowhere USA. For example, SBC. What the hell is it? It's the nondescript logo of a telephone company that stretches from Texas to Michigan to California. So if you're at SBC Park, where are you? The San Francisco Giants recently sold the name of their ballpark to this Anyplace Corporation. There's also the SBC Center. Where are you? At the arena of the San Antonio Spurs basketball team. In either case, SBC's bland corporate logo tells you nothing about the team or the city. It's just another symbol for corporate money. AmeriQuest Field, FedEx Forum, Pepsi Center, American Airlines Arena, Wachovia Center, Invesco Field, Reliance Stadium, Nationwide Arena, M&T Bank Stadium, Staples Center, Phillips Arena. Where are we?
In pro sports, more than half of the facilities, most built with taxpayer funds, now have corporate names plastered all over them. The corporations have paid $3.6 billion to team owners to put their brands on these places. Money that, believe it or not, is tax deductible for the corporation, so we subsidize the branding. The corporate rationale is that naming deals are good advertising. Continually seeing our name, says a spokesman for Petco, which recently bought the naming rights to the ballpark of the San Diego Padres, will click with people and say, I want to shop there. This is Jim Hightower saying, oh yeah, after watching a Padres game, I always say, I think I'll run out to Petco and buy a rat terrier.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Tom Hartman Radio Program broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. On terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system. We have with us Senator John Cornyn.
Exactly.
Of Texas.
It's glad to be with you.
And very, very, very pleased to have you here with us, Senator. What do you see as the major issues in this election?
Well, of course, job number one is national security, and we are a nation at war, not because we initiated it, but because we've been attacked. The trouble is, on 9/11, we finally realized that we had been under attack since at least 1993 by Al-Qaeda. But we also have other important issues like job creation. We need to provide greater access to good quality health care. We've got a long list of issues. Education, reform, following through on the promise of no child left behind. And
why?
The list goes on and on.
Sure. Just to take in reverse order, you mentioned No Child Left Behind. The Bush administration has underfunded that by some, what, $33 billion, I believe. Why?
Well, actually, the Bush administration has spent more money or advocated in Congress has passed more education funding than the Clinton administration did during 8 years in the last 3.5 years.
But I'm talking about No Child Left Behind.
Right. No Child Left Behind, and this additional funding was pursuant to that. Although, you know, in a way, I think while funding is important, what is just as important is the accountability and the remediation, the opportunity for kids who are not up to standard in terms of their learning to be identified and then to be helped. And, I guess I'm a little disinclined to think that money is the only problem, because I hear in Washington that there's never enough money
Sure. For
so many important things. But certainly it is important that we continue doing what we are doing, and that's on the path to bringing No Child Left Behind up to full funding.
Yeah, Senator John Cornyn of Texas. Senator, when No Child Left Behind was being discussed, my senator, Jim Jeffries, sent me a copy of an internal study that was done by the you guys have an internal agency that does research. I forget the name of it.
Well, at that time, I guess, was Jim a Republican then?
Yeah, he was.
Okay, so it was probably the Republican Policy Committee.
No, actually, it was one of the nonpartisan.
Oh, okay. You know, okay.
There's an agency within Congress, Congressional Research.
General Accounting Office, perhaps.
Yeah, probably the GAO. Anyhow, it's like a 70-page report on the impact of No Child Left Behind. And they pointed out that there is a corporation that publishes tests for kids. And I have some familiarity with this. I'm as a volunteer essentially. I'm president of the board of directors of a private school in New Hampshire, and have been for years. You know, for a couple of decades, and so I have some familiarity with this. And this company, as many of these companies, basically puts together a test that costs maybe what, 8 cents, 10 cents, 12 cents. There's intellectual property associated with it, of course. Sells the test for $30 to schools. And that the major impact of No Child Left Behind would be on this one company, for it to go from being a $300 or $400 million a year company to becoming a $1 billion company in the first year, because No Child Left Behind would mandate that school districts across the United States buy this company's tests. And this was the issue that Jim Jeffords told me. He left the Republican Party over. In his worldview, the Republicans were basically selling out to corporate interests, the most active corporate donors. It seems that that's certainly what's going on. I'm wondering. Tom Tancredo, a year or so ago, a good guy from Colorado, Republican, and I asked him, and we've been running a contest actually now for a year. Give away a couple of books to anybody who can answer the question. If he could identify one piece of legislation which had been initiated by the Republican Congress, in the House or the Senate, which had been initiated by Republicans, passed and signed into law by George Bush, that benefited we the people rather than corporations first. Can you identify
Absolutely.
One?
Absolutely.
Okay, what would
I
that
would
be?
I would say the Medicare prescription drug bill that politicians have been talking about for a long time.
That's going to give $200 billion to Ciba Geigy?
Well, I understand where you're coming from, but I don't know who we're going to buy drugs from other than drug companies. And if we're going to provide prescription drugs to seniors, which this bill will do and has done, then somebody has to make those drugs, and somebody is presumably going to earn a profit.
So other,
I would say also to answer your question that the tax cuts provided a tax relief across the spectrum. Many people who no longer have to even pay income taxes, maintaining a 10% reduction to
right.
How, 10%
well, first
tax
of all, practice. How can you call it a tax cut if my children are going to have to pay for it? I mean, this year, you know, you and I are paying $160 billion in taxes on money that Ronald Reagan borrowed in order to try and create good times. Well, why, how could you call that a tax cut when you haven't cut spending? When our children are going to have to pay for it? It's right. It's a tax loan. It's a tax deferral.
I don't disagree with you that spending is a tremendous problem, and my hope is during George Bush's second term that plays tough with Congress, who's been spending like a drunken sailor.
So where's he going to take it? Where's he going to get $500 billion out of the budget?
Well, one thing is we would not have had the kind of economic growth we've seen in the last year, along with the job creation, without the tax relief and tax cuts that we passed.
But where's he going to get $500 billion?
Well, we're going to get it the same place that Bill Clinton got, and that's from economic growth.
Well, actually,
as a result of the,
$290 billion of that is just a direct result of the tax cuts. I mean, a lot of where Bill Clinton got it from was from taxes.
You also have to realize that we are in an environment that Bill Clinton didn't have to deal with. A post 9/11 world, indeed, the economy was in a recession when President Bush took office, and then had to deal with something that came to a head that had been going on a long time, unfortunately, and that is scandals at the highest levels of corporate America. All three of those put a body blow to the American economy. And the alternative was to increase spending and raise taxes on the people who are the economic engine that actually creates jobs in the country. And the president believed, and the majority of Congress, including a bipartisan majority in the Congress, particularly in the Senate, that We need to stimulate the economy. We need to let the people who earn the money keep more of it and save it, invest it, and particularly for small businesses that create the majority of jobs in the United States, get the capital they need to reinvest to create more jobs. I think it's been it's shown itself to be a good policy. Are we where we need to be or want to be yet? No, we're not. But I think we're on the right path.
So you think it's a good thing that we borrow from our children in order to have good times now?
So that
George Bush can get reelected.
Our children would not have any chance at all if the economy went in the tank and we had a depression. And we needed to do something rather
than nothing.
You think
that's what we were facing?
I think if we had raised taxes the way that John Kerry and the Democrats have advocated, about $800 billion just in the last cycle over 10 years, the last budgetary cycle, that it would have an extremely negative effect on our economy.
Interesting. Let's go back to you mentioned Medicaid and Medicare. The Medicare bill. And you pointed out, and accurately so, I think, made a good point, somebody's got to manufacture these drugs. Why is it that the Pentagon, by law, not only has the opportunity, but has the obligation to say, let's just pick a drug, penicillin. In fact, let's pick a patented drug, Prozac, something that's, higher priced. The Pentagon, which is a consumer of Prozac, metaphorically speaking, right? When they go to the manufacturer, they say, okay, we're going to buy 400 million tablets of this stuff. What's your 400 million tablet price? We agree that that's a reasonable thing,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. Bulk discounts, we
that's
believe
right.
in that.
Yeah, okay. Then why did you guys make it illegal for Medicare to do that?
Part of the problem is because this being the first Medicare reform since 1965, something that politicians have been talking about a long time, but no one had been able to do, it was a product of compromise. And I view it as an incremental step. I don't think it's the whole enchilada of where we need to be. I think the answer is ultimately are really two choices. One is we're going to encourage more competition, more choices, better prices because of greater competition in the healthcare field, or we're going to have a command and control, old Soviet-style healthcare system run by the government. And we know how efficient that can be.
You really think those are the only two choices?
I think on the continuum, I mean, there are gradations along the way, but I think those were kind of the options that were being argued for. And I wasn't completely happy with the Medicare bill, but I did see that it represented a clear and present opportunity to begin to that process to reform. Now, we'll see what happens with this prohibition on negotiation of bulk drug prices and where that leads. But it was a product of negotiation and compromise, and one that, frankly, I think we need to look at closely. And maybe if it doesn't work, we need to jettison it and try to do better.
Yeah. We're talking with Senator John Cornyn of Texas. I'm very grateful to you for being here with us. Senator, how do you think that a middle class comes about? How does the middle? What creates a middle class? I'm assuming that you agree that a middle class is a useful thing for democracy.
I'm a product of the middle class.
Okay.
My dad was in the Air Force for 31 years, and we moved around the country. To answer your question, I think education is critical to development of the middle class and opportunity for all of our children. Good jobs. There for them to do, and I also think that access to health care. To me, those are the three fundamentals to the good life, and right. We ought to, every American ought to have access to.
So education in America right now is essentially socialist?
Well, I'm an advocate of school choice and opportunity for people to, if they're stuck in an underperforming or non-performing school, to be able to choose to attend somewhere else where they have a chance, where they're. And so I would say we need a little more diversity, more choice in our public education system.
So if what that ends up meaning is that people who are not people of means have access to inferior education, what's that going to do to the middle class? I mean, here's my point, and correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I really misunderstand this, but it seems to me that we had a middle class in the United States from the late 1600s to the early 1800s that was the product of land, basically a lot of cheap land. Jefferson, you know, saw us as an agrarian nation. He thought that that's how it should always be because land was cheap, you know, so people could produce their own food and have a little leftover. The Industrial Revolution sort of put an end to that. We ended up with a situation from roughly the Civil War to around the late 1920s where poverty exploded, as did riches, and the middle class just shrank and shrank and shrank and shrank. And then you had the Wagner Act in 35, the right to unionize. The GI Bill after World War II, large funding of public education, these, quote, socialist programs, and very high taxes. 90% income, you know, top marginal tax rate on people earning what would today be the equivalent of over about $8 million a year. And suddenly, the middle class reemerged. It had vanished for a while. I mean, there was about a 40-year period there where it had so vanished that the Grange movement, the progressive movement, the populist movement, you know, violence was erupting across the United States during the Gilded Age as a result of that. And so it seems that maybe Roosevelt was right, that the middle class doesn't come out of laissez-faire economics. It doesn't come out of a, quote, free market. But rather it comes out of there being some government intervention. I think we can agree, command and control is silly. And I don't think that you have a command and control health care system for yourself as a senator, do you?
I've got the one that Congress provided. It's a
single payer healthcare system.
It's one that there are various choice. It's paid for by, you know, as a fringe benefit of my employment, but I have different choices within that for what I want to do. But
the bill is all paid by one group, right? The United States government.
Well, most employers do provide the majority of health insurance in America is provided by employers. But I'd like to see it portable health insurance. It's available to anyone, whether they're self-employed or employed by some company or the government.
Where I'm going with this digression, and I'd love for you to forgive me for, is that. And we've only got about 2 minutes left on this.
Okay.
So I'll give you the last word on this. But that it seems that healthcare system that you guys have, which is a single-payer healthcare system, there is not a health insurance company involved in that process. The federal government is paying the bill. Is sort of like with public education. You know, these could be the things that help build and sustain a middle class. Why is the Republican Party so opposed to such things?
Well, I would tell you that my health care plan in Congress is provided for Blue Cross Blue Shield. It's paid for by the federal government. But the point is, and I want to get back to your point about education in the middle class, because I think not even FDR could have anticipated the revolution that technology and global competition has created in our country today. That's why I believe that we need to change the way we approach education and not just view it as something we do for a time and then quit and then go to work. I think we need to change our attitude to one saying, you know, I'm gonna learn my whole life, and I may have to retrain for different jobs because of this vigorous economy and the competition we have globally. And that's why I think, for example, the president's initiative on community colleges is so important, to take people out of lower-paying jobs and then train them to do higher-paying jobs.
Right. Okay. Senator John Cornyn of Texas, thank you very much for being with us, Senator. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Very provocative. There you go.
Thank you. Nice to see you.
Thanks for dropping by. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level. And you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE. or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When human rights groups discover that our third world sweatshops employ a lot of child labor, they're always horrified. These children should be in school, they stridently insist. But why would these kids be better off sitting at a desk learning about social studies than working on our assembly lines? Schools are supposed to prepare you for the future. In most of the places we do business, the only future these moppets have is on an assembly line. What better way for them to prepare than in our sweatshop apprentice program? The kids get paid a special introductory wage while they learn all the skills they'll need for the rest of their short, miserable lives. And those little hands can do some really intricate stitching, believe me. This has been Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaire!
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
Ocean currents sweep all kinds of debris into vast floating patches of garbage. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. 7 years ago, Charles Moore sailed in a yacht race near Hawaii, and when he brought his boat back to California, he sailed through hundreds of miles of plastic trash. Ever since then, he's tried to find out how much junk is in the ocean, where it is, and what it's doing to marine life. Moore is the founder of the Algalita Marine Research Foundation in Long Beach, California. One of its projects focuses on the problem of plastic at sea. Moore says it has a tendency to accumulate and turn into something like a floating landfill. He says one of these garbage patches is in the Pacific Ocean between Hawaii and Southern California. Moore says it's created by an ocean current that moves in a spiral from the equator to the Gulf of Alaska and back.
Debris from our shores gets trapped in this kind of a toilet bowl. Since it's a high-pressure system, it actually has a depression near the middle. If you just imagine an enormous whirlpool, kind of what I call a gentle maelstrom, this debris is sucked in towards the center of this maelstrom. It has a couple of sub-centers on either corner, and that's what the western and eastern garbage patches are.
On his trip in 1997, Moore sailed through the eastern garbage patch, and he says that one is as big as Texas. Moore says some of this junk is debris from commercial fishing, but he says the great majority of it comes from land.
A simple concept is that the ocean is downhill from everywhere, and everything ends up in the ocean.
Moore says a lot of that junk is being swept into these garbage patches in different places around the world. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the Republican National Convention here in New York City, Madison Square Garden, Radio Row, RadioRow.net. You can see us. Randy Rhodes just dropped by and said hi. Maybe those of you who are watching probably saw her. Maybe you can see Louise right there. I don't know. It's a picture. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Chris in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program. Chris?
Rama, I can't hear Chris. You're going to have to pot him up somewhere, somehow, on the aux line.
Chris, you're not there, huh? Oh, well. Well, I guess we lost Chris somewhere along the line.
We've lost Chris. Oh, okay. Well, you know, life goes on. Chris patiently waited as we were talking to Senator Cornyn. It was really a rather interesting experience to get a guy on who had that sudden deer in headlights look about him.
Well, he thought the talking points ended after the first three sentences. He didn't realize that there was more depth to this stuff.
Well, he didn't realize that I was actually going to ask him some hard questions. It's, you know, I guess our contest is still going because, you know, I said, can you name one piece of legislation? And he comes up with Medicare.
Yep.
And it's a giveaway to the drug companies. I mean, it's, you know, what do we get out of this?
Yeah. Hey, some people want to know in the chat room how they're treating you down there, Tom.
Oh, we're having a great time. Although it is the security around here and is just absolutely incredible. You know, police everywhere, and it's wild. But it's an interesting, fascinating experience being here in the belly of the beast. I just wanted to wrap up this stuff about the budget and the budget deficit. The 2004 budget deficit, $445 billion, $700 billion worse than the administration promised. On July 30th, the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, released new projections stating the budget deficit will grow to $445 billion. And then we get guys like, you know, this senator from Texas, Senator Cornyn. I'm sure he's a decent person. Coming in and saying, well, you know, the problem is that we had 9/11 and we had a couple corporate scandals. Yeah. So we lost, what, a few thousand jobs in New York City, which many of which have come back. And Enron went out of business. And that's the cause of the whole thing. Don't you get it? I mean, it's beyond infuriating or bizarre. It's almost reaching into sad and tragic. The spins and the excuses. Thanks for being with us today. Here we are at the Republican National Convention. We'll be broadcasting live tomorrow and the next day. See you then. Thanks to you, Rama, for running the board there and keeping us live and on the air. Thanks to Louise for producing our program. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the planet. Thanks to you. Thanks to you, the listener. Thanks to you for showing up, listening. Thanks to the folks in our chat room, too. Say hi to y'all. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information, available in book.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.